Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
You're listening to Down to Agribusiness with the Irish Farmers Journal.
Good afternoon and welcome to the weekly Farmers Journal AgBiz podcast. My name is Lorcan Roach Kelly. I'm the new AgBiz editor here at the Farmers Journal, and I'm joined by Felim O'Neill and Anne Finnegan today to have a look at the big news stories in agbusiness this week. And I think we'll start with the main stories this week, because something we've been watching for a long time here at the Farmers Journal is the price of fertilizer. And Anne has done some fairly in-depth work for today's edition on what's happening in European fertilizer prices, particularly looking at the nitrogen market. And maybe if you could give us an outline of what's going on and what we should expect with fertilizer prices towards the end of the year.
Thanks, Lorcan. If only I had a crystal ball to look that far ahead on prices. But I'll give it a crack at what's going on. So, I mean, really, it's no news to anybody that the energy sector in Europe is in crisis at the moment following Russia's decision to cut off supplies through the Nord Stream 1 pipeline, gas supplies. That has sent shockwaves across all industrial manufacturing in the EU that relies on gas. And very much the nitrogen production sector in Europe is a gas-based industry. Gas is actually the raw material for the production of nitrogen. So as a consequence, at this stage, almost 70% of nitrogen production in Europe has been shut down because it's uneconomic and margins aren't viable in the sector. And I suppose it's really left, we're at the start of the buying season now. So I suppose for farmers in Ireland who will be looking ahead to their fertilizer requirements of the year ahead, the Irish importers will be going out to market in a very heavy way over the next number of months to purchase that fertilizer that will land right through to the back end of next spring. And roughly about 25% of the season's fertilizer is typically bought at this time of the year. So it's the worst possible time that this could happen in one respect for farmers and for the entire industry.
That sounds like no good at all. And I suppose just a follow-up question, like, is this a European story or is this a global story? Because it seems to me that I've heard like the fertilizer prices in the US are dropping so much, and especially in Asia, places like Australia as well, there's less pressure on fertilizer prices there. So do you think there's scope for maybe European buyers or Irish buyers to increase imports from outside the European Union?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what we're seeing is an absolute softening in other markets. I suppose the US had seen quite a significant shutdown in manufacturing and fertilizer production in 2021, emanating from a range of issues. A lot of that production is coming back on stream now. And I suppose the expectation was the market would potentially be stronger, but some of the big importers like Australia, who you'd mentioned, and indeed Brazil, have covered themselves really well. So they're really well bought through for the season. And in both markets, prices are actually coming back. The market remains tight. And I think the sense out there is that really prices globally now will be dominated or determined by what happens in Europe, how much trade can flow into Europe and at what price. And there's a number of options. So a fertilizer is not to get too technical about it, but fertilizer, nitrogen fertilizer, is made from, use the natural gas to make ammonia, and then the ammonia is manufactured into urea or CAN or different types of nitrates. So there's a number of options for the industry here in Europe. They can buy ammonia, and they can buy ammonia from the likes of America. They can buy it from the Middle East or North Africa and bring that in and manufacture it into fertilizer here, or depending on margins, if the margins aren't necessarily that favorable to do that, they can buy the straight fertilizer in the form of urea, CAN, or whatever else it may be. And they're the options. And the likelihood is that the US will step in, the Middle East and Egypt will step in. And I suppose just looking at the markets there today, there is, I mean, like, I want to say value, and then I'm checking myself because it is relative. But if you look at US granular urea, it's trading at about $690 a ton, so about 695 euros a ton at the moment. That's actually up in the past number of weeks. It's up about $100 a ton in the past 2 weeks. My understanding is it's probably, you could add another 100 euros a ton if you go back to three and a half weeks, and that's really European demand that's driving that price in the US. Similarly, Egyptian granular urea is trading at about 849, and the Middle East is 710. So, like, within the mix there, I think farmers certainly listening to the discussion today will appreciate that these are prices we talked about last spring. So, you know, notwithstanding, I suppose, the crisis in energy and the fear around natural gas, we are talking about markets that can supply into Europe at levels at the moment that we bought fertilizer last spring. And I suppose the other thing to say, Lorcan, I was just taking a look back at my own notes. Like, when we look back at the end of June, the market fell quite significantly at that stage. So Egyptian urea fell by about $100 a ton. There was very slow demand, very weak trade, and it actually fell to below $600 a ton. And at that time, the US and the Black Sea granular urea markets all fell back, and they fell to 2021 levels. So, you know, we don't know at this point, you know, as we chat today, we have no sense of what stock is in the country. We don't know what has been landed through the summer in terms of what was bought at the back end of last season, the early months of the summer, and what was bought right through the summer. You know, there may have been better value bought there in the mix. Obviously, in Farmers Journal, we will be following that as it lands into the country and looking at those imports. And farmers paid significantly. I suppose that's the other point that I would make. There was a significant risk weighting, understandably so, in the supply chain last year, but that risk never materialized in that the, you know, the market hasn't fallen. Prices have stayed very strong. So, you know, farmers have certainly put an amount of liquidity into the fertilizer system that you would hope that would support the supply chain as it goes out to buy for the season ahead.
Yeah, I think it seems to be like a lot of the price, the risks of the price falling significantly from here seem to be fairly low, because the price that is needed to make it worthwhile to import fertilizer from the US or even from Africa or Asia needs to be fairly high. The one thing I suppose maybe throw a slight, might be something that we could possibly hope for, is there is a possibility that we could see fertilizer exported through Odessa again, where the Black Sea trade might restart at some point, because it is covered by the UN agreement, brokered agreement on grains out of Odessa from Ukraine. Do you have any information about that, or is there much hope on that side?
Yeah, well, it is part of the agreement. And actually, you know, even this morning, I heard on the wires that the Russian president was complaining about the movement of Russian grains into Europe. So Russia isn't enamored with how this deal has been implemented. But the deal did pave the way for not just the exportation of the Ukrainian grains, but also for Russian grain, Russian fertilizer, and that key input in nitrogen, ammonia that's made from gas, which is piped from Russia through the Ukraine to the port of Odessa. And Russia accounts for 25% of the world's export market for ammonia. So a huge volume of ammonia. And I suppose when sanctions were imposed, there was actually probably nearly greater concern in the fertilizer market over that ammonia trade rather than the actual fertilizer trade, because there was a sense that that fertilizer trade, the granular fertilizer, liquid fertilizers would make it out of Russia through different trade routes with different trading partners that hadn't sanctioned them, but the ammonia was going to be a problem. And 50% of Russia's exports actually come through that pipeline in Odessa. So, you know, talking to some analysts over the week, the challenge at the moment is first of all, getting vessels and getting traders who are willing to bank on that ammonia, and obviously the risk premiums there will be high. It is going to take something like the movement that the US made to move the Ukrainian grain to give some form of guarantee to people that they will back this kind of trade. And I think the more that Russia have spoken out, I suppose, in the past number of weeks about what's moving out of Russia, about their discontent, I mean, obviously at an international level, the key is to keep this agreement in place. It was in place for 120 days from when it was put in place in July, with an option to extend that indefinitely. And that is key for Ukraine, and it was key for their harvest this year that they could empty the silos and fill them again, and it will be key coming into the next season as well. So I think there is hope, does remain there, and obviously like the other big one to watch is India, and India has the capacity to suck up a huge amount of nitrogen from the world market. You know, they've brought three, I think, large tenders to the market this year, and they've all had a big bearing on the market. So it's a watch and see, as I understand it. It's well supplied at the moment, and obviously it has a it still has a significant channel of trade into Russia where other countries wouldn't.
Okay, that's super. And I think we know everything we need to know about fertilizer for the next week anyway. And we'll come back to this, I'm sure, many, many times before the year is out. Speaking of fertilizer and gas prices, we hit on gas prices a few times there, Phelim. You had a small piece today just about what Europeans are trying to do, European leaderships are trying to do right now about gas prices for the winter. Could you give us a small update on what's going on there?
Yes, Larkin, our colleague Stephen Robb actually contributed a small piece this week just on how the EU ministers are meeting to discuss how they will deal with the fact that Russia now has basically put a stop on exports altogether to the European Union. And European gas prices have been extremely volatile over the last 10 days or so, surging upwards then back and rising again this week on the foot of that announcement. So basically they're looking at different options, including a price cap on gas to be used to produce electricity. And it's, you know, this is part of the whole wider energy debate, the wider consumer and indeed industry debate that's taking place, where now energy prices and gas prices are escalating to, I suppose, unprecedented levels, and the risk that that brings, say, both to individual consumers and to business as well.
Yeah, it seems like the whatever they manage to do ahead of the coming winter, it's going to be very expensive for any kind of fuel heating costs into this winter. And I think that may come out to something else that's happening on Thursday. Just speaking of costs that are coming up for people, I did a small piece today about the European Central Bank. We're recording this on Wednesday before the decision is announced, but we know they're going to announce a rate increase on Thursday of this week. And it's just something I think that we have to be aware of, for especially on the business side of things. The European Central Bank is looking to push interest rates up to around 2% over the next few months. And that's going to make a big difference for borrowing across the areas there, for consumers and also for farmers. If you're looking at, you know, getting revolving credit or looking to buy a new tractor or looking to get a stocking loan, all that's going to cost more money. And it's going to start costing more money at the same time as all your input costs are going up, your heating costs, your fertilizer costs, as we discussed, your electricity costs are going up. So this really is like the European Central Bank is giving more bad news just when we don't need it.
And Larkin, this is very much trading season now, when a lot of beef finishers are buying cattle for housing, so they'll be looking at bigger working capital requirements. They stand to be exposed to that increase in rates.
It'll probably take a couple of months for it to actually factor through to the cost, I think, for farmers here, just in the way that base rates are calculated. But we'd have to say it's a good time for anybody with borrowings or looking to borrow to get advice on looking at fixed rates, you know,
absolutely,
and how they can hedge that into the future.
If you can fix right now, fix as low as you can, because rates are only going up from here. It seems very much the story from all of the central banks. Phelim, maybe we just finish up. Have you got a small bit of good news that we can finish up on the beef trade, especially to Asia?
Well, certainly there looks to be something of an opportunity there. And of course, we've had quite a bit of coverage over the past couple of weeks of a ministerial-led trade mission to Asian countries. The Minister for Agriculture, Charlie McConnellogue, and the Minister of State, also Minister Hayden, have led this mission around different parts of Asia. But the one that caught my eye in particular was that they seem to have focused in on Japan as a possible beef market. And the Farmers Journal done a bit of digging this week into the Japanese market to see what's behind it, who supplies it, etc. And the discoveries are that it's essentially between the US and Australia. Japan's the third biggest beef importer in the world after China and the US itself. And its two main suppliers are Australia and the US, who between them would supply over 90% of the beef that Japan imports. It was 584,000 tonnes in 2021. Ireland have been approved for that market since 2013, but we have made a very minor impact. You know, US sent 320,000 tonnes last year. We sent 3,200 tonnes. So, you know, they're sending 100 times more than we are. So I think it's fair to say that that's a market we should be looking at seriously, because Irish beef exports, unlike dairy and unlike pig meat, we have a very minor presence in Asian markets. In fact, we have a very minor presence in any market outside the European Union or the UK. But Japan could work, because a couple of things in particular come to mind here. Cattle prices for much of this year have been ahead of Ireland in both the US and Australia, the two main suppliers. And also the fact that Japan, up until the trade deal, the EU had agreed a free trade deal with them that came into effect at the start of 2019, all Irish exports were subject to a tariff of 38.5% on beef. Now, that is being progressively reduced. It will fall over 15 years by 2033, I think it is. It'll fall to 9% where it'll stay. But at the moment, we're in the same tariff rate as Japan and the US. So when you look at those basic numbers, it suggests to me that that's a market that has some serious growth potential for Irish exporters, even though it's on the far side of the world. Now, of course, the UK and the European Union will remain the major markets. There's no tariffs to go there. They have the geographical proximity. But I think Japan's one that we can be somewhat positive about in terms of looking ahead into where exports might grow over the remainder of this decade.
Yeah, and another, I suppose, not having all one's eggs in the same basket. If you can have some beef exports going halfway around the world, that's always a good thing. I think that more or less winds us up for this week on the Ag Business Podcast. Join us again next week and check out us on farmersjournal.ie or pick up a copy of the Farmers Journal in your local shop.
We hope you enjoyed this Irish Farmers Journal podcast. You can find all our podcasts at farmersjournal.ie/podcast. And on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.